Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you broadcasts from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. There's crime in this hour. Later on, 21st Precinct from 1954, but right now it's Suspense, starring Vincent Price. The play called Rave Notice and was heard on CBS on June 1st, 1958.
And now, Rave Notice, starring Vincent Price. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
I'm an actor, and this is a theater. Up there on the stage, beyond the empty seats, lit by the single bare bulb of the work light, are my fellow actors. We are here to make a play. Friend Norman, sitting alone in the third row, is our director. This is the fifth day of rehearsal. It's not a bad little play, but you know Norman. Norman will manage somehow to spoil it. Norman will misdirect the actors and lose the values.
No! No, 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 no.
But, Norman, why not?
Why not? Because I am the director and I say no. No!
Yes, Norman.
All right, cast, take five. Oh, Sam.
Oh, yes, Norman.
Sam, come over here. I want to talk to you.
Sure, Norman, sure. Well, what is it?
Sam, I've had to turn over the bell ringer to Luther.
The bell ringer? That's my part, the bell ringer. What do you mean, Luther?
Don't make it difficult for me,
difficult?
Sam.
Difficult? I'm not making it difficult. The bell ringer role is mine, that's all. There's no difficulty involved. You must be kidding.
It's not as if I hadn't warned you,
Sam. Well, look, tell me what's wrong. Tell me where I've gone off, what irritates you, what doesn't fit. I'll fix it. That's my role, Norman. I carry the whole play with that role.
Don't shout, Sam. Don't make a fool of yourself.
A fool? Oh. Look, Norman, why are you doing this to me?
Because you're not right for it.
Not right? You fat pig, what do you know?
No, easy.
What do you know? What do you know about acting?
Easy, Sam, take it easy there.
Fat belly, fat head, fat face.
That's enough.
You know nothing.
I know you. I know actors. You're no actor. You stink.
Oh, I'll kill you for saying that. I'll kill you.
Did you hear that, Cast? Your witnesses, he's threatening me again.
Yes, listen well, my friends. Norman, I'm going to kill you.
Norman, I'm going to kill you. You see, you can't even deliver that line. You stink.
Yes, gentlemen.
I want to buy a gun.
Yes, sir. And what sort of gun did you wish to buy?
One that'll shoot through fat.
Sir?
Oh, pardon me, I was thinking. What have you got?
What was it you wish to use this gun for?
I want to kill a rat.
Oh, I think then maybe 22, huh? Now then, let me see here. Yes, a nice little gun.
That looks pretty small. This is an awful big rat, a fat rat.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, I think a shotgun then, a 410, yes.
You think that'll do it?
It should.
Bullets, you have bullets?
Shells you use in this gun.
Very well, I want one.
One box?
No, one shell.
Only one?
Yeah, this rat I'm not going to miss. Time now. He will come out of the stage door and walk this way through Shooter's Alley on his way to Sardi's for a drink. I slide the gun out from under my coat and I wonder, heart or belly? Heart or belly? Belly. Belly, yes, his cultivated paunch battered with actors' hearts. Here he comes, on cue for his exit. Goodbye, Norman.
Sam! I'm shot.
Norman, you're dying.
Please, somebody call an ambulance, please.
Is this how you play your death scene, Norman? You're dying, Norman. Play it! He didn't die right away. He just lay there in Schubert's Alley and bled. And then they took him to the hospital, and they took me to Toombs Prison, and they got me a lawyer. I suppose when he dies, I become a murderer, huh?
Yes.
They'll electrocute me.
Yes?
I must have been crazy.
I thought of that.
What do you mean?
Temporary insanity. I thought we might plead that.
Well, why don't we?
Because you threatened him before witnesses at least twice, went to a store, chose a gun with great care, waited for him to appear. You did all this, and then you shot him.
Yeah, that's right, I did.
That's premeditated murder. First-degree murder.
So the temporary insanity thing is out?
Way out. The only other thing I could think of is if we could prove you were insane all along.
What would happen? I mean, what would happen if I were?
Then they couldn't execute you.
Of course.
You seem very calm.
I'm an actor. Insane. Mad. I know a joke. A wonderful joke. I'm going to beat Norman, even in his grave. I'm going to have myself exonerated of his murder. Yes, freed of the charges. It's so simple. I'm going to play the greatest role of my life. Play it without makeup, without lights, without script or cue. I'm going to play a part strangely parallel to my nature. I'm going to play a homicidal maniac.
In a moment, we continue with the second act of Suspense.
Another visit with Joe and Daphne Forsythe.
Joe, what are you doing?
Oh, hi, Daphne. Just eating a midnight snack.
What is that mess?
That mess is a liverwurst, salami, lettuce, and peanut butter delight.
Nightmare is more like it. What woke you up?
My stomach was growling. What woke you up?
You. And I was dreaming such a pleasant dream.
Oh? What?
I dreamed all of our savings bonds had matured and we were cashing them in.
That's kind of a dream I can appreciate.
We were planning a trip around the world, and you bought me a fur coat, and I bought you that fishing tackle you want. Oh, it was gorgeous.
Well, it doesn't have to be just a dream. Some of our savings bonds are ready to mature now.
Joe, maybe we shouldn't cash them in. They can go on earning interest, you know, and it adds up fast.
I know. That's why we started buying savings bonds, remember? With a bond a month on the payroll savings plan, our money is saved automatically.
Stop waving that sandwich under my nose. You're making me hungry.
Well, fix yourself a sandwich, ma'am. I got all the makings right over here.
All right. Move over, you bond-buying midnight maverick. I'm going to fix myself a humdinger.
And now, starring Vincent Price, Act Two of Rave Notice.
I'm going to play a homicidal maniac. How? How? By using the method, the Stanislavski method. You know, what is the most horrible thing I ever did? The thing closest to murder. I must recreate that mood. Murder, killing, blood. I killed a cat once. I was 6 years old. I had a stick. It was in an alley, this cat. I poked it just for fun. He scratched me and I hit him with the stick. He started squalling and, oh, I thought I'm going to get in trouble. Stop that noise. So I hit him again to make him stop and again to make him stop. And there was blood, red blood on the gray cement. And I struck and struck and struck out the screen. Struck out the light. Struck out the awful gaze of those great yellow eyes. Struck out the light. Strike out the spirit, the spark I killed. A murderer am I. Killed for the thrill of the silence of the cat. Murderer, I am. Killed without reason. That's it. That's the character. All I need for turning it on is the memory, those key points, gray cement, cat's eyes, my feelings as a 6-year-old. Oh, there'll be refinements. I'll refine it. Oh, if you were only to see this scene. Dim the house lights, raise the curtain, and now to bring in the audience. Ha 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 ha
Hey, you.
Who, may I ask, are you?
Huh? What's going on down here, Murph?
I don't know.
Who are you? Who are you? Who are you? Who are you?
Come on, now, will you, Mac? Calm down.
I ask a civil question. I expect a civil answer. Who are you? Who are you? Who are you? Who are you?
So nice and quiet for a while. Right?
Just answer my question. That's all I ask, and that's not much for a hero to be asking now, is it?
You don't know who we are.
I think he's putting on an act.
Hey, don't turn your head away. We know you hear us.
Yeah, leave him be.
You think he's kidding?
Who cares?
That was very weak. You can do better than that. You're supposed to be a murderer, a homicidal maniac. So what's the emotion? Guilt. You've got to be guilty, 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 guilty. Smear yourself with the stuff. Guilty, bloody hands, guilty, and you want to be punished.
Yes, punish yourself.
That'll do it. But it'll hurt. So what? Not like it hurts when they shave your head and slit your trousers and strap you to your seat. That seat, 10,000 volts coursing through this poor player's frail body. Murderer. Guilty. You should be punished. One, two, three. Curtain going up.
I'm guilty. I'm guilty. There's blood on my hands, blood and filth and disease. I smashed him on the gray cement and smashed him. I murdered him. I'm a murderer. I confess it. I confess
hey.
It. Oh, look, I want to confess to purge myself of this guilt.
Oh, come on.
I am guilty, you idiot. I smashed him. I smashed him.
Why are you getting so worked up about the guy ain't even dead yet?
Not dead. He is dead. He's been dead these past 36 years. 36 years. Oh, me. If you don't punish me, I...
Oh. Hey, what are you doing? Hey, will you quit beating your fist against the wall?
I am guilty. And I shall be smashed as he was smashed.
Hey, your hand, you're going to bust your hand on that wall
there. I shall be smashed. It is written. You know the writing in blood that lies across the counterpane in the bed under the window when little boys are supposed to be far away in Slumberland.
Mahoney!
Yeah?
Get the doctor. This guy flipped.
Good. Killing me. It's broken. I don't mind the bloody scraped knuckles or even breaking his head, but not the bones. Two cats dead. Murdered by my stick. Four cats dead. Murdered by my stick.
How long has he been doing?
About 15 minutes, Doctor.
I see. All right, now, you can stop that.
I don't stop. I don't look. I keep right at it. I keep it apart. Murderer. Guilty.
Stop it.
I'm paying a price.
Stop it.
I am buying my way out of the electric chair.
All right, grab it.
No, please. I want to pay. Stop. I'm the guilty one, and I want to pay my debt to society.
Hold it.
No, let me go. I must pay.
Steady. This will quiet him.
Hypodermic needle. An injection. It'll knock me out. I can't act if I'm unconscious. I can't play my part. It's my guilty part. It's got to hurt myself. Got to hurt myself.
We have together ample capacity in freedom to defend freedom. This is NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. The North Atlantic Treaty Organization goes far beyond a formidable military defense organization. Within its networks of committees functions the machinery to contribute to further development of peaceful and friendly international relations by strength of sharing tasks and pooling scientific facilities and information. The United States of America is a part of NATO. You should be aware of and alert to the objectives and programs of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization.
And now, starring Vincent Price, Act Three of Rave Notice.
Here, so white, such sweet stillness and peace.
gone the darkness of the cell, steel and concrete. They're watching me very carefully. The taller one, he's new. The other gave me the hypodermic, yes. Hypodermic. How long have I been out? Did I say anything while I was out? Perhaps if I keep still, they will let me know.
Hey, you're definitely suicidal tendencies, Doctor.
Well, to put it another way, obsessive guilt with a compulsion to self-destruction.
Nothing new about that.
Look, he's opening his eyes.
Hello? You awake?
Who are you?
You remember me, don't you?
No.
Well, I gave you something to quiet you a little while ago.
A little while ago, huh?
When you were trying to injure yourself so we'd think you're insane.
And you've decided to give that up, haven't you?
I have to carry out my sentence, you know.
How will you carry out your sentence?
Be smashed. I'm to be smashed as I have smashed the cat.
Is that the law?
Yes, I smashed him with a stick.
Stick?
Hmm?
You mean shotgun, don't you?
Oh, why would I say shotgun if I meant stick? I said stick.
But you shot the man with a shotgun.
It was a cat, and I smashed him with a stick.
Well, after you smashed him with a stick, what happened?
What?
What happened after he was dead?
I was frightened. I went home. Mama was there. She said, how did you get blood on your hands? I said, a dog licked my hand, and he had blood on his teeth.
I understand you're an actor.
Oh, aren't we all actors? We try to act innocent when we're killed.
Doctor, will you step outside a moment?
I've got them. What are they talking about out there? I wish I knew. It doesn't matter. I've got them. I know that. I've got them.
Well, I guess you'll be leaving us soon.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. You're very understanding, Doctor. I'm guilty and I must pay. You know that.
What the doctor means is that you're going to a place where they'll help you to get well.
Get well, huh?
Yes, of course. Doctor, if you'll have the affidavits drawn up, I'll sign. We'll get a court order committing him.
Right.
Seems you were right all along. You know, I wasn't sure until you told me about the man he shot being out of danger.
Oh, yes. The guards told the patient his victim had recovered. But he didn't comprehend, of course. But right on screaming and punishing himself.
I see. What would they have given him if we'd found him sane?
Well, that depends. The injured party refused to press charges. He'd be out of here in an hour.
Recovered? They didn't tell me Norman had recovered. How could he have recovered? I shot him in his fat paunch. When did they tell me? It was while I was screaming, maybe. I was really into the part then, deep in it. I couldn't have heard them, And now he'll be free, and I will go off to an insane asylum, married to a role that I loathe, that I hate. No. Doctor, come back. It was all a joke, Doctor, a game. Come back.
What is it?
Listen, Doctor, I have a confession to make. I'm not insane. Please believe me.
Oh, of course you're not. Just a little confused, that's all.
Oh, no, you're wrong. Don't you see? It was all a gag. Just a gag.
Yes, of course it was. Now you're going to a place where you can rest and everything's going to be all right.
No, believe me. I am sane.
Why shout?
I'm not shouting. I only want to impress on you.
You were shouting rather loudly.
Look, my lawyer said if I could prove insanity, I wouldn't go to the chair.
Chair?
Yes.
I thought you were to be, you said, smashed.
Oh, forget that. That was a part of the method.
Method?
The Stanislavski method. It's a system of acting.
What do you think, Doctor?
I don't know.
Well, the patient seems to be telling the truth.
Yes, he does.
I can fool you all over again if you feel it's necessary to prove my point.
No, I don't believe you'll be able to fool us again.
Doctor, what's your opinion?
I say the man's in full control of his faculties, is aware of his crime, and committed it out of what society calls a sober motive. I say the man is sane.
You, sir, do you agree with the doctor?
It's what I've been telling you.
And I say sane. That makes it unanimous.
General, never in the history of the theater has such a performance been rendered, nor under such adverse circumstances.
Just one more question.
Of course.
Why did you kill him?
Kill him? But I didn't. I shot him, that's all. Shot. You mean shot, don't you? Don't you?
No.
But he... Norman, he is dead.
Yes, and you were sane, and you were going to repay society with your life.
Norman is dead! Treacherous, lecherous, body villain! Bring down the curtain! The play is ended!
Suspense, in which Vincent Price starred in William N. Robeson's production of Rave Notice by James Poe. Supporting Vincent Price in Rave Notice were Lou Merrill, Peter Leeds, Barney Phillips, Jack Crucian, Jim Nusser, and Jerome Thor. Listen. Listen again next week when we return with Mr. Larry Parks in The Invisible Eighth. Another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Suspense, on Tuned to Yesterday from June 1st, 1958 on CBS. The story written by James Poe is actually used two times previous to this broadcast, once in 1954, and the debut was on October 12th, 1950, where Milton Berle was in the title role. You are listening to An Hour of Crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for an episode of 21st Precinct featuring radio actor Everett Sloan from July 7th, 1954 on CBS.
21st Precinct, Sergeant Waters. It's sinking. What is it, a freighter? Oh, a barge. A collision with what? Yeah? Yeah?
You're in the muster room at the 21st Precinct, the nerve center. A call is coming through. You will follow the action taken pursuant to that call from this minute until the final report is written in the 124 room at the 21st Precinct.
Hello, CB. Sergeant Waters at the 21st. There's a gravel barge sinking in the East River off 61st Street. No, they got the barge captain off, all right. You better send a police launch and ESD. Okay? Yeah.
First Precinct. It's just lines on a map of the city of New York. Most of the 173,000 people wedged into the 0.9 square mile between Fifth Avenue and the East River wouldn't know if you asked them that they lived or worked in the 21st. Whether they know it or not, the security of their homes, their persons, and their property is the job of the men of the 21st Precinct.
The 21st, 160 patrolmen, 11 sergeants, and 4 lieutenants, of whom I'm the boss. My name is Kennelly, Frank Kennelly. I'm captain in command of the 21st. I was working my day tour. At 8:35 a.m., sector car number 5 came by the house to take me to the East River Drive near 61st Street. A gravel barge had sunk in the river on the previous day, and salvage operations to clear the channel had begun that morning. I had anticipated that the work would create a curious attraction and result in a serious traffic problem along the East River Drive. As Patrolman Dillon, the operator of sector car number 5, drove me to inspect this condition, I saw in the block ahead of us a large moving van parked at the curb in front of 181 Sutton Place North, one of a row of large and elegant residences which had in recent years been converted into multiple dwellings of medium-sized, very expensive apartments. Also parked there were two departmental vehicles, sector car number 2 and the sergeant's car. I instructed Patrolman Dillon to pull into the curb. And as he did, I could see Sergeant Waters standing on the sidewalk talking to an attractive and well-dressed woman. 4 moving men were several feet away, engaged in conversation near the cab of their van. All right, stay with the car, Dillon.
Yes. Hello, Captain.
Well, I don't see why I can't.
Oh, what's the trouble here, Sergeant?
Mrs. Lenwick?
This is Captain Kennelly, commanding officer of the 21st Precinct.
How do you do?
Mrs. Lenwick?
What is it, Sergeant?
I just want my furniture, that's all. That's what I had these men come for, to get my furniture. They're standing around, and I have to pay them while they stand around. It is by the hour, you know.
Well, why can't she get her furniture?
That's exactly what I'd like to know.
Well, Captain, seems like the super won't let her up in the building. He won't let her into the apartment.
Oh, why not?
It's mine. I'm entitled to get into it.
Super says she separated from her husband about 3 weeks ago. He says he's still living in the building. Super said he's got no right to let her go in there without permission from the husband.
Look, I have the key. You see, I have the key. The furniture always belongs to the wife. The things in the house always belong to the wife. That's taken for granted.
Not necessarily.
Well, in this case, they do. Now, something ought to be done, because I can't keep these men standing around and paying them an hourly rate.
Where is the super, Sergeant?
He's inside with a Carol, Captain. The super's been trying to reach the real estate company that manages these buildings.
Well, I don't know who he has to talk to.
And you've got to remember, Mrs. Linwick, that if they let you go in, they could be liable.
I can't imagine what they'd be liable for. I'd just be getting my own things.
Why didn't you take them when you left?
Because I left at 2:30 in the morning. How could I take them in?
You could have come back for them within a reasonable time.
Now, look, one doesn't find an apartment the first day they go looking. I moved into a hotel and sent for my clothes. Now, I have found an apartment, and I want my furniture.
Where is Mr. Linwick?
I haven't any idea.
Super told me he saw him leave the house with a suitcase last night. He was apparently going out of town on business, Captain.
He's always going out of town.
Super's been trying to call Mr. Linwick's office as well as the real estate company. I don't suppose either of them opens until 9 o'clock.
All this to do about something that belongs to me.
Have you talked this over with your husband, Miss Linwick?
I have not.
Well, don't you think you ought to?
I see no reason to.
It'd be a lot simpler if you worked it out together, if you decided what's yours and what's his.
I know what's mine, and I know what's his. Very little is his.
Well, I can't say that the best way to do it is to come around here when he's out of town and go into the apartment. I think the least you could do would be to notify him what you're up to.
There's no reason for that. I spoke to my lawyer, and I am perfectly within my rights. Perfectly within my rights.
Well, that may be your lawyer's opinion, but what about your husband's lawyer?
I don't give two hoots for his lawyer's opinion. Now, look, I have a business of my own to attend to. I'm a fashion designer, and people start to call me at 9:30 in the morning, and they want me. They want to talk to me.
Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
Have you got Mrs. Linwick's new apartment address?
Macaro's got it, sir.
622 East 52nd Street.
Uh-huh. Have you got her office address?
Yes, sir. Macaro's got that, too.
Well, it's certainly beyond me what it takes to get my own furniture back. To have that stubborn man say no, not to let me up in the building, and to have the police involved in this thing.
Well, it'll all be settled, Miss Linwick.
Oh, yes, I'm sure it will be. In the meantime, you know how much it's costing me an hour with those four men in that truck standing by there? It's costing me plenty.
There's one consolation, ma'am. It's probably causing your husband a lot more.
I don't care what it costs him.
Oh, here's the super, Captain.
Oh, yes.
Mr. Swanagi.
Yeah. I'm ready.
That's not necessary, I tell you. I'm entitled to take my own things out.
You may think you're entitled to, Mrs. Linwick. Your lawyer may think you're entitled to. I may think you're entitled to. But you don't take nothing out of there until I get the word from the office. Now, I'm not getting caught in the middle of any deal like this. Believe me.
This is Captain Kennelly.
Oh, yeah.
Joe Swanagi, the super here.
How do you do? I heard a lot about you, Captain.
These pleasantries aren't getting us anyplace.
Sometimes pleasantries can get you pretty far, Mr. Linwick. You said it, Captain. She comes around here 8 o'clock in the morning with the moving men and gives me a hard time. What am I supposed to...
Look, these are my things.
Mrs. Linwick, I told you, I don't care whose things these are. That doesn't make a bit of difference to me.
What do you mean?
They can be yours. Nothing goes out of here until I get the okay from the office.
Oh, of all the stupidity I've ever in my life...
Call it stupid, anything you want. That doesn't make any difference to me. If they tell me to let you in there, you're perfectly welcome. Now, Captain, you can understand how I don't want to get caught in the middle here.
Yes, I can understand.
Hey, you see, Mrs. Linwick, now, if he can understand, why can't you?
My lawyer told me I could go in there any time and take anything
out. Mrs. Linwick, look, that's what makes horse races. Your lawyer may have one opinion. Somebody else's lawyer may have another opinion. That's what keeps the Supreme Court in business. Mr. Swanagi, where did you use the phone?
Down in my apartment, down there in the basement.
And you tried both the real estate company and Mr. Linwick's office?
Yes, sir, I tried them both. I don't get any answer any place. It's too early.
Well, I think you might try again.
I'll try if you want me.
I'll go downstairs with you, if you don't mind.
Yes, I wish you would, Captain. I wish you would see to it that he does try. I don't want to keep these men in this truck waiting any longer than I have.
You don't believe that I try?
All right, she believes you. Sergeant, you stay here with Miss Linwick.
Yes, sir.
Let's go try the phone again.
Yeah.
And just make sure that he does try, Captain.
Yes, I will.
She thinks her husband slipped me $10 not to let her in. Evil mind. I'll get the gate here.
Yeah?
He does take care of me once in a while, yeah, for small favors. But I swear, Captain, he never mentioned a word about letting her into that apartment to get me furniture. With, downstairs.
She, left him 3 weeks ago, is that right?
Yeah, that's what the talk is. She just walked out one night after a hot argument. About 3 weeks ago, I guess. In here. It's all right, Ellie.
All right, honey.
Just me to use the phone again. My wife, she worries when she hears that door open.
How long have they been living here?
Oh, let's see, 5, 6 years, I think. Yeah, about 5 years. No, this has happened before, you know. She gets up, she leaves him about 3 or 4 times a year. You know, I told my Ellie they ought to put a swinging door up. Well, this 3 weeks is a long time. She never walked out for more than a couple of days at a time before. You
know. Oh, didn't she?
No. Sometimes it was 2 or 3 days, sometimes 3 or 4 days, sometimes a week. But she always comes back.
What does he do?
Mr. Limerick?
Yeah.
Well, he's an engineer, like. No, he goes around companies in trouble, you know, with something the matter with their plant or the way things are working or they need more space or something. He goes around, like, he makes what they call these surveys. You know, it's very technical stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody had to go to some school, learn all that.
Where's his office?
Oh, down in Wall Street. He's got a place down in Wall Street. He's got a firm named Engineers with his name, and there's 3 or 4 others in it, you know, like a bunch of lawyers, only this is a bunch of engineers.
Yeah.
His name's right up there, too. First, I think. Linwick, something, something, and something.
There's no financial problem, is there?
Well, listen, as far as I know, none. They pay the rent on time, on the button, or he does. And to pay the rent in this place on time, that means no financial problems. You know what they get for 3 rooms here? You wouldn't believe it. Should I call?
Yeah, try his office again first.
All right, sir.
After she moved out, Mr. Lindley didn't ask you to change the lock or anything, did he?
No, sir. He didn't mention anything like that. He didn't say a word. I didn't mention it. As far as I was concerned, she was coming back. She always does. It's ringing. There's nobody down there yet, I don't think.
Let it ring a little more.
Yeah. I don't know. As far as I'm concerned, if I was him, first time she walked out, I'd have had that lock changed. Even my Ellie, who always takes the lady's side in these things, didn't like her. You know, they're not going to answer there. Nobody's there yet.
All right.
You know, if that lady wants to do the right thing, she'd get together with him. She'd get it all worked out. They'd say, this is mine, this is yours. They'd separate all the stuff, you know, and things like that. Not to come around there with a moving truck, 8 o'clock in the morning. You want to clean the joint out?
Yeah, you ought to try the real estate office.
Yeah. Fine way to do to a guy. Come around, just clean him out.
What time they usually open up? 9?
Yeah, 9, but sometimes somebody's there before. I don't see the logic in it. I don't understand. Hello? Oh, hello. This is Joe Swanagi, the super 181 Sutton Place North. Is Mr. Silent in this morning yet, by any chance? Yeah. Oh, good. Could I talk to him? He's there. She's getting him. This is my boy, the guy who manages these buildings.
Oh, I see.
He's got the answer. He's got the answer to everything. He's a... Hello, Mr. Solent. This is Joe Swanagi, the super at 181 Sutton Place North. Yeah, look, Mr. Solent, we got a little problem over here. One of the tenants, 3A, Mr. Limwick, you remember I told you last time you were here that they separated, she walked out? Well, he's out of town, Mr. Solent, and she came up here this morning in a moving van and 4 moving men there. Well, she wants to clean the place out. She wants to take the 4 men and go right in, so I said she can't do that. So she said, I'll call the cops. I said, go ahead, call the cops. And they're here right now. Yeah. Yes, sir, you know, I was polite. I just didn't want to get in the middle. Or was she who wanted to call the cops? I didn't want the cops around here. Yeah. Yeah. No, sir. He didn't ask me to change no locks or anything like that. No, he gave me no instructions to let her in or keep her out or nothing, so... Yeah. Yeah, well, what I want to know, Mr. Solomon, is what am I supposed to do? Well, I mean, there's five cops here, and there's four moving men, and her, and this big moving van. What am I supposed to... I understand, All right. All right, Mr. Sullivan. All right, Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. All right, sir. Goodbye.
Well?
He said let her in. He said let her take whatever she wants. This is supposed to be a man's world.
Now back to 21st Precinct and Captain Kennelly.
As I left the Sutton Place address, the moving men had started upstairs to the Linwick apartment. Sergeant Waters instructed his men to resume patrol, and I got back into sector car number 5 with Patrolman Dillon. He continued to the East River Drive and 61st Street, where the salvage operations were underway. The sight of deep-sea divers and their gear had, in fact, attracted much attention. Traffic on the drive was slowed to a crawl, and the two patrolmen on the job had additional trouble keeping curious pedestrians from crossing the road. After observing conditions for a few minutes, I got back into the car and had Patrolman Dillon drive me to the nearest call box. There, I rang into the station house and spoke to Lieutenant Gorman, the desk officer. I told him of the condition and gave him instructions for him to detail two more men to the job. I continued on patrol of the precinct until 11:30 when we drove downtown to the 15th Precinct Station House at 160 East 35th Street. There I attended the meeting of all precinct commanders in the 6th Division, which was called by Inspector McBride in regard to a proposed new recruiting program for civil defense volunteers. The meeting ended a few minutes before 1, and I returned to my command, where in the muster room, Sergeant Tierney was on telephone switchboard duty and Sergeant Waters was sitting in as desk officer. I walked around the desk to sign the blotter.
21st Precinct, Sergeant Tierney.
Hello, Captain.
Sergeant?
All right.
14.
Where's Lieutenant Gorman? He had to take his meal late, Captain. The mendicant squad picked up 9 mooches on 3rd Avenue and dumped them in here.
Oh?
Lieutenant Gorman didn't get finished writing up the arrest until 12:45.
Well, where are they? Back in the cells?
No, sir. The patrol wagon came, and they were on their way down to court.
Okay. Anything doing around here?
Oh, that fellow over there came in about 5 minutes ago, Captain. He's waiting to see you.
Yeah?
I told him I didn't know when you'd be back.
Well, who is he?
He gave me one of his cards. Yes, sir, here it is. Richard Linwick, Captain. Consulting engineer. The husband of the lady with the moving van, I guess.
Oh, yeah. All right, I'll talk to him. I'll be in my office.
Yes, sir.
21st Precinct, Sergeant.
Mr. Linwick?
Yes.
Hello, Captain. You wanted to see me?
Yes, if you have a minute. I understand you were over at my apartment this morning.
That's right, I was.
Very sorry.
But you understand there wasn't any law violation. There was nothing we could do.
No, well, that's not what I wanted to talk to you about, Captain. I didn't expect you to do anything.
Would you like to come to my office?
Yes, thanks.
Go ahead, Mr. Linwick.
Yes, thank you.
Have a chair.
Thanks.
Well, what can I do for you, Mr. Linwick?
Well, it's really not very much, Captain. You see, the super of the building finally got in touch with my office right at 9 o'clock this morning.
Yes?
He told my secretary what had happened, and she called me in Boston. I was in Boston on business. She reached me at my hotel, and I took the next plane back. I went right to the apartment from LaGuardia. The truck was already gone.
Yeah, they can work pretty fast if they want to.
Yes, so can Joanne. The only thing that she left was my clothes hanging in a closet. The clothes I had in the drawers, my shirts and things, she just took out and piled in a corner. Everything else was cleaned up. She didn't even leave a bed for me to sleep on.
Well, as I told you, Mr. Linwick, there's nothing there that calls for police action.
Oh, I know that, sir.
Excuse me.
Yes, of course.
21st Precinct, Captain Kennelly.
This is Sergeant Waters, Captain.
Yes?
Captain, there's a two-alarm fire at 761 East 89th Street.
All right. Have a car come by for me.
Yes, sir.
Was what she took out yours or hers?
Well, Captain, I paid for it, but I don't care. I mean, she can have it all if she wants it. There were some very nice things there. I had several $1,000 in furnishings, but I don't care. The only thing I'm really angry about is a large Copenhagen bear that she took. I got it as a gift from a friend of mine after she left, and she took that with everything else.
Uh-huh. Well, what do you want?
Well, I'd like to get that Copenhagen piece back. I I called her office, but they say she's not in. I understand she gave you the address of the new apartment.
No, she gave it to one of my men.
Does he have it?
Well, I'm sure it's in his memorandum book.
Well, could he give it to me?
Well, I don't see why not. You're her husband, aren't you?
Yes, I'm her husband. We've been married 6 years. You know how many times she's walked out in the 6 years? 9, that I remember. And she did it. I always used to hope that she'd come back. I prayed that she'd come back. And I was very glad to see her. All my friends told me I was crazy. But this time she stayed away too long. I'm glad she's gone. The only thing I want back is that Copenhagen bear. She's not entitled to that.
You're not going to make any trouble if you get her new address.
Oh, no, sir, no. All I want is that one thing that belongs to me, the one thing I care about. As far as the rest of the stuff is concerned, she can have it. She can sell it, she can keep it. She can do anything she wants with it. Now, this is the best thing that's ever happened to me. I don't know why I didn't let it happen years ago.
I guess you know what's best for you.
Yes, sir, I think I do. When I got back to the apartment, I told the super to change the locks. After the horse is stolen, that's me. Change the locks after the horse is stolen. He did it right then.
Why didn't you do it before?
Well, I've been trying to figure that out, Captain. I guess I have. I think I wanted her to come back. Unconsciously, at least. My lawyer told me she might do exactly what she did. He advised me to change the locks, but, well, I left it. I was hoping that she'd come back. I thought maybe I needed it. But I don't. I'm sure of it now. I don't want any part of it. I instructed the super that if she does show up and wants to get in the apartment now, not to let her in. I gave him explicit instructions.
Yeah, well, I'll get the officer on the job over there and see if we can find her new address.
Oh, fine. I certainly appreciate that, Captain. And I guarantee you I won't cause any trouble. All I want to do is go by there and see how I can get that piece of Copenhagen. It's a beautiful thing. You know, it stands about this high. Are you interested in Copenhagen?
No.
Well, I used to have a collection of it, but, well, she didn't like it, so I got rid of it. Had some very nice things. This friend of mine sent it to me from Denmark, you know. He was on a job over there.
Excuse me.
Oh, yes.
21st Precinct, Captain Connelly.
Sergeant Waters, Captain.
Yes?
New alarm fire just hit out, Captain.
Oh?
Yes, sir. Vaccaro rang him. He said it was an automobile on fire inside a filling station. First fire officer on the scene turned in a second alarm because it was near all his gasoline and oil. But it's all right. It's out.
All right, Sergeant. Cancel the car. I won't roll.
Just a second, Captain. Yeah? That's so. Captain?
Yes?
A superintendent from 181 Sutton Place North just rang in again, Sergeant Tierney tells me.
Oh, what's the trouble there now?
Sergeant said he asked for Mr. Linwick. I told him he's in your office.
Is he still on the phone?
Yes, sir.
All right, put him through to here.
Yes, sir. Tom, put that call through to the captain's office. Hold on, Captain.
Right. 21st Precinct, Captain Connelly.
Hello, Captain. I just wanted to talk to Mr. Limerick. He told me he was going there.
Yeah, he's right here.
Well, I can tell you, his wife is here again. So is the moving van. She wants to move all the stuff back in.
Well, is she doing it?
Well, he had me change the locks, and he gave me specific instructions not to let her in the place.
Well, you want to talk to him?
No, if you just tell him to get right over here, she's giving me a hard time.
All right, I'll tell him.
Please, and tell him to run, not walk.
All right, I will.
Yeah, thank you.
Ah, that was a message for you, Mr. Linwick.
Oh, it was?
Yeah, it was the super at your building. He says your wife is back at the apartment. So is the moving van. He wants to put everything back in again.
Oh, does she?
He wants you to come right over there and get it settled.
Well, she's not going to. I'm not going to let her.
Well, she's waiting there, Mr. Linwick. Don't you think you ought to go over and get it settled?
Oh, it's settled. It's settled now. But I better go up and talk to her. That's the least I can do, talk to her.
Mr. Linwick left my office in a dejected frame of mind. He said he was going right to his apartment and get the matter settled. I remained in my office, cleaned up some additional paperwork, and talked to a delegation of Second Avenue merchants who were complaining about vandals breaking their store windows during the night. I told them we had increased our patrol activities in that area in order to prevent the vandalism, and that Lieutenant Matt King, commander of the 21st Detective Squad, had his men investigating the case.
I promised them that I would check with Lieutenant King to determine how far his investigation had progressed and whether any arrests could be expected shortly. At 2:25, a car came by the house for me, and once more I went out on patrol of the precinct. At 3:20, during the course of the patrol, we had occasion to turn into Sutton Place North. There, in front of 181, was parked the same huge moving van that had been on the scene in the morning. Standing on the sidewalk were the four movers, and several feet away from them, Mrs. Linwick was talking to the superintendent of the building, Joe Swanagi. I instructed the operator to stop the car. All right, stay here, Dillon.
Yes, sir.
Well, it's about time somebody got here.
Oh, did you expect me, Mrs. Linwick?
She expected her husband?
I most certainly did. I understood that he left the police station 2 hours ago and was coming right over here. Where is he?
Oh, I haven't any idea, Miss Linwick.
Well, he must have told you where he was going.
He said he was coming here.
Where did he want at the police station, anyway?
He just wanted to know where he could find you.
Oh, did he?
He told me they said at your office that you were out and wouldn't be in for the rest of the day. He wanted to know if we had the address of your new apartment.
Did you give it to him?
It wasn't necessary. In the meantime, we found out that you were here.
Yes, I've been here. I've been here for 2 hours. 2.5 hours, almost. And he won't let me upstairs.
Well, it's a different story now than it was this morning, Mrs. Linwick.
Well,
an
I don't see why...
entirely different story. We got instructions from Mr. Linwick not to let you in the apartment. And I changed the lock for him. Now, that situation's a little bit different than the situation was this morning.
I understand you want to move all the furniture and things back.
Well, that's what I wanted to do, but after 2 hours, I'm not so sure.
Now, if you moved them out this morning, why do you want to move them back this afternoon?
Now, there's a question.
Because I thought that I would give him another chance.
Are you sure he wants it?
Doesn't look like to me he wants it. He told me to keep her out, change the lock. That doesn't look to me like he wants
it. I'm still his wife.
Yes, that's true.
And I demand the right to get into my apartment and put our furniture back.
Mrs. Linwick, you were standing right there when I checked with the office again, and they told me inasmuch as Mr. Linwick gave me instructions not to let you in, and you had moved out already, and the lock had been changed, not to let you in.
And what more could I do? Where could he be?
I haven't any idea.
He knew I was here.
Yes, he did.
Maybe that's why he didn't show up.
Joe, you've been making sly remarks all afternoon. Now, I wish you'd stop it.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir.
I'm still paying those movers by the hour. 4 men in a truck and mount up, you know.
Well, Cap, here he comes.
Well, it's about time.
Mr. Swanagi, you better go back into your apartment till they need you.
Oh, Captain, I stuck it out this long.
Go ahead.
All right. You say so, Captain.
Look at him. He sees me standing here. He sees me. He's waiting 2 hours and he comes down the sidewalk as if nothing in the world concerned him. As if there was nothing happening around here at all.
Mm-hmm.
Richard. Richard, here I am. Oh, how do you like that? Richard.
Yes, I see you, Joanne.
Where have you been?
Oh, hello, Captain.
Mr. Linwick.
Where have you been? I've brought everything back. I'm willing to give you another chance. And you keep me waiting here for over 2 hours. 2 hours and a half, almost.
Well, I'm sorry about that, Joanne.
Well, come on, give me the key so we can get the furniture upstairs.
No, I'm not going to do it.
What do you mean, no, you're not going to do it?
Just that, Joanne, I'm not.
Richard, I'm willing to come back to you. Don't you love me, Richard?
I always thought I did, Joanne. Now I only feel sorry for you.
Sorry for me?
That's right. I've been walking for 2 hours. I've been trying to figure out whether I should take you back just because I'm sorry for you. And I decided not to, Joanne.
I see. Don't I have some say in the matter?
You had your say. You walked out. I just can't take you back because I'm sorry for you, Joanne. So that's it.
Captain. Captain, tell him he's got to let me in. He's got to. That's the law, isn't it?
Well, I couldn't give you an opinion on the law, Miss Linwick.
Well, he can't turn his wife out on the street. He can't just evict her from his mind.
I don't know whether I can or not, Joanne, but I'm going to try.
21st Precinct, Sergeant Waters. Wait a minute, who is this? Where? What's the address? Yeah?
10, so it goes. Around the clock, through the week, every day, every year. A police precinct in the city of New York is a flesh and blood merry-go-round. Anyone can catch the brass ring, or the brass ring can catch anyone.
21st Precinct, A factual account of the way the police work in the world's largest city is presented with the official cooperation of the Patrolmen's Benevolent Association, an organization of more than 20,000 members of the Police Department, City of New York. Everett Sloan in the role of Captain Finelli, Ken Lynch as Lieutenant King, Harold Stone as Sergeant Waters. Written and directed by Stanley Niff. Produced for CBS Radio by John Ives. Art Hanna speaking.
21st Precinct has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
First Precinct, on Tuned to Yesterday from July 7th, 1954 on CBS. And that wraps up this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden years. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVanier. It's been a pleasure.